BYUSN, we're 10 days out from BYU season opener against Southern Illinois. How much are the Cougars favored by, and what would be a good enough win? The Senior Bowl watch list was released this morning. The Cougars have the fewest names on it in the Big 12. Was BYU snubbed, and who should have been on it?
Plus, defensive lineman John Nelson's back, ready for big senior season. He'll tell us where BYU's D-line's most improved and what's motivated him the most in this offseason. And should BYU have more home games? We'll look at the pros and cons of a school playing seven or more on their own turf.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. It's great to have you. It's Wednesday, August 21st. Happy birthday to my sister, Whitney. I'm Jerem Jordan. He is Oklahoma State NIL contributor, Dave McCann.
You know, I'm not necessarily a contributor, but this is how easy I could become one.
Yep.
The Cowboys are putting a QR code on the back of their football helmets, which links fans to be able to donate to their NIL. I don't know how close you got to be able to shoot that on your phone as the game is going on, or if you go down to the sideline, you try to zero in on a helmet.
That's going to be hard with a camera phone.
But the genius behind this is, hey, there's a QR code. What's the QR code? It has to do with NIL, and it gets a fan to think, well, should I contribute or should I not? But then you got guys on
social media. Pistol Rick is hilarious.
Going next level.
Go for it on fourth? Yes, $100. No, $50.
It's like the way they do gaming now, where you can bet through the whole game.
Yeah.
Here's a situation where they can raise money the whole game. How about, hey, you don't like our quarterback? You'd like us to get another one?
Donate.
Here's the QR code. Donate now.
Who's going to be able to shoot the back of the helmet? Like, you're going to have to get some bench warmer on the sideline if you're close. What if you're up top? You can't zoom in and get that. They got to throw it up on the scoreboard occasionally.
Or in the stadium or somewhere.
Yes.
But
yes,
it's all about raising money.
Sure.
And this is an interesting idea.
Isn't Boone Pickens loaded? Like, they don't need this, right?
They don't need it.
Also, this is in response, I feel, to Mike Gundy's comments the other day that were not well received by some relative to, hey, we're not negotiating now. And it's like all of a sudden Mike's like in a somewhat forced statement, like, oh, this is great. We got to keep ahead or get ahead.
Who knows?
QR codes.
It's tough to be a coach today. You're a CEO.
You used
salesman,
to be a coach.
Now you're trying to coach some football games, or you get fired. You know,
you're managing a company where you happen to also sometimes play football.
But if there was a QR code at Lavelle Edwards Stadium,
yeah,
or you put a big hashtag in the end zone that works on everyone's phone, and you can constantly generate money throughout the game with the product that fans are either happy with or wish it was better, that's kind of a genius idea.
It'd be awkward to create marketing versus the team, though, if it's not going well.
Right.
You
know,
to your point of you want to change
midway through
the
season, all of a sudden, new coach? Here comes the QR code. But where are we going with this?
We should do that on this very program. Hey, do you think my takes stink? Vote on this QR code.
$25 goes to
Shep runs in here for the B-block.
Goes to the safety. We're in that kind of world. It's crazy.
That's how it works. Give me a tip. Venmo me. Yeah, whatever. All rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending.
We're not looking for talent now. We have it here.
Our defense will be a defense that makes teams earn their touchdowns.
But I think the first game, even though it's only FCS, is a good indicator game of where this BYU team might be.
The perfect setup from Gregor Bell right there about Southern Illinois coming up in a mere 10 days, Dave. 10 days away. The line's out for that game. BYU favored, of course, at home. P4 team, FCS team. Granted, Southern Illinois is kind of a top 10 FCS program.
Yeah.
It was a 19.5 point line, which almost seems a little low to me to start. It's now down to 16.5. Would a 17 point win, I dare say 17 plus, be a good enough win for BYU in game one?
There will be some that say yes, just give me a win. But there's others that look at last year, for example, Sam Houston. Now, this was their first year as Division I, so they're coming from the FCS. And BYU was about the same, a 19-point favorite against Sam Houston. Beat them 14-0. The problems in that game stayed with the team the whole season. So that was really an indicator of what they are, as opposed to, hey, it's first game, we held everything back, blah,
Everybody
blah,
relax.
Blah. In hindsight, that was the game that showed where BYU had strengths and where it had weaknesses. Strength, Jacob Robinson was a strength all season long.
Mm-hmm.
Got two picks in that one. One in the
one should have counted, the others.
But he got him, technically.
Well, both counted, but one shouldn't have.
But the run game and all the things that they struggled with,
issues.
They continued to do so. So when you think of a 17-point win, if it's 17-0, then there's questions about the offense, right? If that's the final score.
Yeah.
Then you go, okay, well, what about 24-7? Same thing.
Would that be
reminds
good
me of Portland State a couple years ago, 20-7.
Yep.
But then you go 34-17. How does that one look? That's a 17-point win.
Is that enough points for you? 34.
Today we don't know who the quarterback is, so maybe we were talking the other day, 35 or
would
more, but you're right there.
Does the point total change if I say Jake versus Gary for you?
I don't know. I wonder if the spread would have changed by saying, hey, we know who their quarterback is. Here's how much BYU will win by. But even Vegas putting the line out, they don't even know who the quarterback's going to be. So
right. I don't think it changed that much. Gary hasn't played in a long time. Jake is somewhat unproven.
That's a lot of points in the gaming world. That's a lot of points, 17. But I think if it's 41-24,
I go, that's a lot of points allowed.
But what about the defense? It's supposed to be so much better this
year.
Right. So you're kind of in that danged if you do, danged if you don't in a 17.
Good BYU TV edit there. I like that.
Well, that's how I roll. I think Cougar Nation wants to see them just hammer these guys. But they hang their hat on defense, this FCS school. And BYU has enough mystery in the offense. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting. But I think Cougar Nation goes, it's got to be more than 17. Give me 20. Give me 25. Give me enough to go, okay, next week at SMU, we can go score points.
Yes. Okay, I was going to say, what does hammer look like? So you're saying like 24 plus, 25?
Yeah, I think
so. In that range? Okay, I think it needs to be 28 plus because, as you can see, the Salukis pride themselves on defense. Granted, they lose all but four starters on this defense, but they were top seven in points per game and yards, sacks, takeaways. That's awesome. They're a very good defense. They lost seven starters from that group. They have a couple of guys coming back in the secondary. Also, look at this. The last couple of years, they have some FBS wins, including a P4 win. So they beat Northern Illinois last year. The year before that, they beat Northwestern.
Right.
And then in 2019, beat UMass. And then they played Kansas State tough in Manhattan, a one-score loss by 8, 31-23, in 2021. So this is not your token FCS team just buying a game. This is a team that in some releases, Athlon Magazine specifically said, hey, this is one of the best early season P4 versus FCS games. I don't like seeing BYU on that list, Dave. But I think 28-plus would be good. My perfect score, well, give me 50-0, right? But like a realistic perfect score, 42-14. Defense may have coughed up a late touchdown with the threes in there, and then you score 40-plus. To me, that would be like, okay, the offense found something against what has been a good defense that has played FBS teams tough. 17 would not be enough. It needs to be 24, and you need to put up 40-plus in the first game for us to feel like, okay, the offense has found something. Now, would something in the 30s with single-digit points allowed work for Cougar Nation? I think
three,
it would.
Maybe.
31-7, something like that. I think that would work. But we also want an indication that it's not last year. So you got to show us something offensively, mainly.
This number is a sign that BYU is going to see throughout the season. All right? It's like, well, why isn't that more? Well, why is Vegas say 4 wins or 4.5? Mm-hmm. Seems like it should be so much more. Somebody's right, somebody's wrong. But until BYU proves it, considering the schedule they have coming, one, they're going to be underdogs in most of these games. And in games where it's like, what, BYU, Wyoming? Seems like BYU should just go do this, this, and this. And the number outsiders are going, nope, they're going to do this. And we can argue about it and dispute about it. But it's really up to the team to go out and show we're better than everyone thinks we are.
Yes.
And Kalani has said throughout camp, look, we're still a secret. Let's just keep that a couple weeks. Let's keep it for a couple more weeks. But we are better. We know what we have. We are better than what the outside thinks.
Yeah.
And the first judgment is 10 days away.
BYU operates way better in this space than they do in the we're the favorites, we go out there. After 2021, big expectations for that 10-3 group that returned Jaren Hall and a lot of pieces. And 8-5 wasn't good enough. We'd take 8-5 right now in the Big 12. We would take that as opposed to play it out, I think, for most people. So we'll see what BYU can muster against Southern Illinois. 17 plus, as a 16.5 point favorite. Not enough for you and I. Not enough.
We'll see where that number goes here the next few days. It's a buffet today, so let's move on to the second item on the table. The 2025 Senior Bowl watch list came out earlier today. Tyler Batty, Gary Bohannon, those are the Cougar representatives. Fewest of any of the Big 12 schools, and there's 16 of them. But we were talking, do you think there should be more, or do you think these two are about right?
First off, I'm happy that Gary made the list. I don't necessarily think he deserves to, given that he didn't even play last year and you don't know what he's going to be. You don't even know if he's going to be the starter.
Right.
So that's cool for Gary. Tyler Batty should absolutely be on this list. One other guy, there's only one other that I think should have made it, and that's Jacob Robinson. Proven dude, 8 picks the last 3 years. That doesn't seem like a huge number of picks over 3 years, but it's not the 80s and 90s where quarterbacks are throwing 20-plus picks and staying the starter. It is different now. You have to throw single-digit picks. They get the ball out quick, check down city for some programs. So Jacob Robinson is a proven commodity. I think he should have been there. So for BYU to get more dudes, they need to win a little more, and then they need to have individuals do stuff that merits that. Like if Darius Lassiter had 700 yards last year, he would have been on this list.
There's not a lot of seniors on this BYU team. That's one of the qualifications
20 total.
To get to this. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why the number's down. But performance, 5-7, lost 5 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough for all those guys to go, guys, we're watching all these guys.
And there's no Kingsley Suamatia sitting there either.
Any projected draft pick that way.
Yep.
We spotlighted Jacob Robinson on AFR last night. He's phenomenal.
Yep.
5'11", been undersized his whole life. He holds his ground. He's got everything in front of him to have a huge year and be on these kinds of things at the end of it. But as we sit ahead of the opener, just Batty, and again, Bohannon, we don't even know if he's going to start.
But he's
in his last year, and I'm glad that he got recognized.
There's 10 seniors. There's 10 fifth-year seniors. Of those 10 fifth-year seniors, almost every single one of them will play prominently into this team. Listen to these names. Keanu Hill, Darius Lassiter, Hinkley Ropati, Isaiah Banya, Ray Paulo. He's the one that may play just a little less than the others because there's a loaded tight end group. Logan Lutui, Braden Keim, Caleb Etienne, Gary Bohannon, Mark Collins. Those guys will play prominently into this team this year, those fifth-year seniors.
And there's a big difference of being on the watch list and being invited to go play in those postseason games.
Yes, I can see.
Get there.
I could see a guy like Connor Pay making the Senior Bowl at the end of the year should he have a great year. Like if Keanu Hill has a 660-6 kind of year at tight end, you get that invite, man.
We'll see
what happens. Okay, topic three, loaded day, as you said, the buffet. Chuck-a-rama, eat your heart out. We expect both BYU offense and defense to improve in key areas in year 2 of the Big 12. So let's look at 5 stats from last season. Let's debate whether the offense or the defense needs to improve more in that category, okay? Number 1, scoring. The offense put up 23 a game last year, 99th in FBS. Defense, 29.8, 96th in FBS. Which one needs to improve more?
Well, those numbers shout 5-7, right? Or even 4-8. But in this league, if your defense is going to give up 29 points, well, then you have to score 30. If BYU went 12-0 this year and they won all their games 41-40, be awesome season. They're going to the playoff. And no one would be going, I can't believe we're giving up 40 points.
That's what TCU felt like they did a couple years ago.
Exactly. But when the offense struggles, then the pressure's on the defense. It's like, well, now you've got to win the game for us, and now you can't do it. But I still think you've got to, you know, the nature of the game is the team with the most points wins. So you've got to score more than you give up. And both have to be better. But the offense has to be significant. You can't average 21 points a game.
No, that's not
going to be good. Not in this league.
This is BYU, Dave. Offense reigns here. This is QBU.
Yeah.
This is where BYU chucks it. This is where BYU is explosive. This is where they produce. BYU, I would rather lose a shootout than win a low-scoring game. I'd rather win, period. But if you have to pick, someone's got to improve, and you pick one side. Offense. I think last year the defense did a pretty good job for the most part. But they were playing from behind, and they had to take calculated risks, some uncalculated at that point, where they were down by too much too often, and they buckled at the end. For example, Texas. I thought the defense played great. Offense didn't put them in position to be in it at the end. Defense kept getting takeaways and fourth down stops and whatnot. So I say offense, which, by the way, BYU hasn't scored 40-plus against an FBS team since 2022 in the opener against UCF. So this offense needs to put up some points in the opener, settle and calm themselves and us down of, you know what, it's going to be better.
Score a little more. Defend, but score a little more.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We've detailed this a lot over this last offseason. But BYU's got to run the ball better. and they got to stop the run. I think that's been a topic every single week since the season ended. Offense last year, 104.3 yards a game, under 3.5 per carry, 111th in FBS. The defense, in stopping the run, they allowed 177.7. That was 109th in the FBS. Allowed over 4.86 per carry, which was 111. So we're looking at two numbers which were awful.
Yeah.
Jay Hill's talked about stopping the run. Yep. And Aaron Roderick's goal through the spring and summer is running the ball. So they see this number the same as us. Which is the most critical?
I'll be an echo chamber here. Offense. If you can establish the run and stay on the field and move the chains and get some points, it also helps your defense. Because I think the defense got tired last year. Three and outs and can't run the rock and can't finish drives. The offense struggled. They are symbiotic, absolutely. But if you're going to tell me I get to pick one that improves greatly, I'm picking the offense so that BYU can get down the field, give the defense some rest, score some points, create some confidence at that point.
Recent years, 2020, BYU 15th in rushing, 24th in 21. They were 16th.
They had a notable running back.
In 22,
way,
yeah. NFL guys can really help. They went from 16th to 111.
Yep. Chris Brooks, notably in 22. Pretty good.
And Connor Pay puts a lot of that on the offensive line as opposed to just the guy carrying the ball.
Yeah.
And that's been their battle cry going into the season is that has to be better. And if it is, you and I could rush the ball for a couple of yards.
I don't believe that, but it's a fun point. Another important area.
I just said for a couple yards. That would be below the average.
Yeah, they need four plus, as you talked about earlier this week. Okay, third down conversions, offense or defense? Offense, 128. That was third to last, 28.5%. That was terrible. Defense, 116th last year. Wasn't good either. Third down conversions, offense or defense?
These are really good. We hope you're thinking about it at the house because the inability to get off the field leaves your defense out there forever. The ability to convert a third down drives you into scoring position where you can get more points. We've already established the fact they need more points, so they've got to do better on third down. Give the defense, they're going to be some tough games. I think BYU schedule is like fifth toughest in the country or something like that. There's going to be some tough games where when your defense is out there, they need to be rested because they're going up against some of the best. So give them a break. Stay out on the field longer on offense. Convert some third downs. Improve that number. Get a few more points.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden when the defense comes out, you can give them a high five and say, hey, good luck. We'll be back out there and you'll be on the sideline for 20 minutes resting up for your next.
Mm-hmm. I say, guess what, offense? I think it's easier to control a game when you have the ball than when you don't. I just think you can decide what's going to happen. The defense has to react to you as opposed to you reacting to them. I just think if BYU on offense can move the chains at a higher clip, let's get into the 40s. I would love mid-40s. When you have a great tight end, like Dennis Pitta, it was close to 50. Like it half the time, boom, boom, you're cashing in. And Aaron Roderick and Kalani Sitake are pretty aggressive. So if they get into a fourth and manageable, they're going to take that calculated risk at times. So, again, I say offense. Shocking.
I'm glad you gave Dennis Pitta a shout-out.
I love Dennis. We just don't always have time for him, unfortunately. Yeah.
All right, here's the last one, and this one's the telltale. BYU as a team historically has to win the turnover margin to win games.
Feels like every football team.
Yeah. Offense last year, 75th in giveaways, 19. They were 38th in takeaways with 20. So which is the most critical? Protect the football or get the football?
It is interesting because defensively I feel like you can make a play, but also you kind of have to be a little lucky. Like a fumble, you can rip it out, but if that guy protects it, it ain't coming out. Also, if the quarterback avoids you, you're good, but also you can be in position like Crew Wakely against Texas to make a play right there or Jacob Robinson against Cincinnati. So I'm going to say offense again on this one because Aaron Roderick values the rock. He thinks so highly of the quarterback that protects the ball. He said Jake Retzlaff didn't throw a pick in spring ball, and he was aggressive, and that he's limited turnovers in the fall, and Gary Bohannon has done his best to try and do that as well, although we heard there were some interceptions on Saturday. That's good for the defense, too. It's all good. But I say offense because, again, you can control whether you cough it up. Don't throw a pick. Don't fumble it.
During BYU's five wins last year, they forced 14 turnovers, and they turned it over twice. And then in their losses,
that's amazing.
In their losses, they coughed it up 17 times.
That's the story.
That's the story.
Turnovers.
In the wins, your defense is creating turnovers, but
and you're not giving
but
them
the
up.
Bigger picture is the offense is protecting the ball. Mm. In the losses, the offense is giving the ball up left and right,
yep.
and BYU did that all season long. And so protect the football. Protect, keep the ball. Cash in when your defense gives you the ball, but when you've got it, you can't give it back. Not at the frequency of last year, and not in terminal ways like pick sixes and return fumbles.
That was rough.
And throw in special teams punt returns as well. But protect the ball. You protect the ball, you win.
So to reiterate those numbers, in the 5 wins, plus 12, in the 7 losses, minus 11.
Yeah.
That is stark. Can BYU overcome turnovers? It's hard when the offense struggles. When you're a dynamic offense, sometimes you can overcome that. But BYU was not last year, so that was tough. Take care of the ball and you give yourself a chance.
If there's one stat that might separate Bohannon from Retzlaff here in practice, it's who turned it over today and who didn't.
I think
we're going with him.
That'll be a big deal for A-Rod. He always talks about giveaways. Is it more critical for BYU to limit on offense or defense? That was our question. Okay, our question of the day is this, however. BYU currently favored by 16.5 against the Salukis of Southern Illinois. Would a 17-point win be good enough? 17 plus, thank you very much. At Dallin W. BYU on X. Nope, 17 is not enough. That's the line for BYU team that exceeded 4.5 wins. If we think BYU is being underestimated this year, and they should win this game much bigger than 2 touchdowns and a field goal. The reason I came up with 17 plus originally is, to me, that's a blowout. That's 3 scores. But when you're at home and you feel like you're improved against an FCS team, albeit a good one, you need to show yourselves and the fans and the Big 12 and the country that, nope, we blew these guys out and we had a great game and we are on to SMU next
year. Yeah, Dallin's saying, hey, you win by 17, you're the team that's expected to win 4.5. So you got to do better than that.
Do better than that.
Yeah.
I like that. Continue to weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram.
This week's After Further Review continued our player profiles, including last night. We talked about Keanu Hill's transformation from receiver to tight end. You can watch the show anytime you want, as many times as you want, on demand on BYUSN.com.
Coming up, how does the defensive line create more havoc this season? John Nightmare Nelson tells us as BYU Sports Nation continues.
There's certain players that I think are playing at a super high level. John Nelson, the interior of the D-line, I really like.
John Nelson all over that. Under pressure, set. And Chapin set. John Nelson.
Hoping to see that plenty this fall. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation in Studio B in Provo, Utah. I'm Jerem Jordan alongside Dave McCann. Great to have you. Defensive lineman John Nelson expected to be one of those key guys on the defensive line inside at tackle, trying to create more havoc this year in year 2 of Jay Hill's defense. Earlier this week after practice, I spoke with John Nightmare Nelson.
All right, let's talk about the do-rag. When was this the look for you and why?
You know, I like to you know, think of it more as like a pirate cover.
Okay.
I don't know why. I just was sitting one day and I thought to myself, you know, I need something to cover my whole head because sometimes my hair still comes down to my eyes. So I just got a pair of leggings and I cut off the sleeve, cut it in half, and then kind of finagled it, and here it is. That's it.
It's homemade.
Yeah, this is homemade. I don't know if you can tell, but it's hopefully it's one of one.
It's awesome. Maybe one day you'll sign it and you'll throw it out at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. A lucky fan will get it.
Yeah, hopefully.
Then you'll have to make a new one. That might be tough. Yeah. How's fall camp gone for you and the defensive line?
Fall camp's gone great. Yeah, this is my 4th fall camp. It's gone swimmingly, some might say. And defensive lines, we've just added more to my skill set and just been another year in the system with Coach Sione and Coach Sione Pua. So putting that coaching, you know, into my game for, you know, a whole other off season's made me a lot better. And just been one more year in the scheme, and so it's been all kind of blended together and made us into a better unit.
You always want to be bigger and faster and stronger, but what have you added in terms of moves or skill set to the bag this year?
Yeah, this off season I gained some more weight. When I got injured last year and lost some weight because I was bedridden for 2 weeks, and anyway, so it was kind of starting from ground zero. So I've gained about 20 pounds since January, and as far as moves, this year, this off season, I was just really worried about, you know, making sure my basics were, or my foundation was, you know, rock solid. So nothing too crazy, nothing too flashy, but I just kind of had to go back and brush up on some old stuff.
Some people are trying to lose 20 pounds. So what's the key to gain 20 pounds?
To a lot of Chipotle burritos and sandwiches.
Which one?
Double chicken. Mm. Double chicken and Jersey Mike's. That's all you need.
Are you saying together in the same lunch?
I would eat normally and then just have one Chipotle burrito, and then I'd eat normally and have a Jersey Mike's sandwich if I was feeling hungry. That was about it.
That's how it goes when you're burning that many calories and trying to bulk up. Across this defensive line, a lot of talent, a lot of returners. How do you guys feel like you can create more havoc this year?
Just adding more skills in the offseason stuff. We worked on pass rushing a lot as a D-line. I know that's kind of been our weak point in the years past. The scheme has kind of allowed us to get after the quarterback a little more. I know last year we were a little bit better at it than years prior. I mean, I think Tyler Brady led the Big 12 in hurries last year. So this another year in the scheme is allowing us to create more one-on-ones and allow us to get after the quarterback a little more. And now we're kind of given a little more freedom to get after the quarterback when we know it's pass. So it's been that, in a combination with some extra coaching from some analysts here, so it's gonna be exciting.
Are you alluding to one Gary Anderson?
Gary Anderson a little bit, and some more defensive staff. They realize the importance of getting after the quarterback. Mm. We did a pretty good job last year, but it just wasn't enough to make a big enough impact to change the game. So we gotta get better at it, and we worked on it all offseason. And Tyler Batty coming back helps a lot, and I'll be back. I'm healthy now, and Isaiah Banya, Logan Latui, and Blake Mangelson, all those guys, and Josh Singh. You already hear that name a lot. He's gonna, those guys are gonna get after quarterback every play.
Blake has kind of flown under the radar for a long time. Logan's getting a lot of love. What do you want to say about some of your teammates that are kind of coming up in the depth chart and will make an impact this year?
Yeah, Blake Mangelson's one of them. He's coming over from D-end. He's a heck of a ball player. He's a tough country kid coming down from Nephi, Utah, kind of my neck of the woods a little bit. He's making a lot of plays. And Josh Singh, he's a guy that's been here for a while, and he's had every excuse to not try his best or not give it his all, but he's kept stuck with it and worked hard and, deserves every chance he's going to get, and you're going to hear his name called a lot this season.
Blake, you, Tyler, it's like the South Utah County, Drew Ebb County All-Stars? Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, 3 for 4 is not bad, but, we love all our guys, and yeah. So I'm proud to represent that part of this part of Utah, and especially all those BYU fans that live all close right there, so... Whenever I go down to Salem, they get all pumped up. And they asked about they'll get pumped up about us. But I was down at Salem. They asked me about Blake and Tyler actually. So it was funny.
Caleb Etienne was saying over the weekend that Tyler actually had like a big old Bowie knife on him at the kind of activities.
Yeah, he's
the Tyler on brand thing, right?
Yeah, we weren't really surprised. He he heard camping and he took every opportunity he could.
That's awesome. In terms of this group, this year, this defense, this season, obviously. Trying to get to a bowl game and better. What are you most motivated by from last year to this year that's kind of helped your offseason?
Yeah, the most motivating thing was realizing how close we were to a lot of games. I mean, there's three games in my mind that got away from us that we had control over and lost for whatever reason, one way or the other. There's that one, and playing some big names last year, and reading the tape. I mean. We had some special teams touchdowns and whatnot, and some things that didn't go our way. But what's motivating is knowing that we were so close to being a lot better than what we showed. But we just as a group and as a defense, we understand that we can't let up for 1 second. We can't let coaches yell at us to play harder. We have to find it within ourselves. And in this conference and this good of competition, that there is no luck. It's just whoever out prepares, whoever else, and whoever stays, mentally focused longer, and whoever can play harder.
Your brother is a tackle. What's it like to sometimes maybe go up against him as a D lineman, O line?
Yeah, I actually went up against him today in practice. He was playing scout. I mean, he's played quarterback his whole life, so.
And he got too tall?
Yeah, he's a freak of nature. He's tall and got long arms, and every coach is going to want him to play O line. And anyway, so I was actually lining up against him today, and I was telling him, while I was lining up, I'm like, hey, Jax, make sure your hands are inside, or make sure you don't lean over, what I mean. So I'm always trying to help the kid, but yeah, so he's going through a big learning moment right here, and he's come a long way, and he's got a long way to go, but his coach T.J. Woods, he's a heck of a ball coach, and he's doing a good job coaching him up.
Let's hope he can be like a former quarterback turned lineman turned NFL offensive lineman, Blake Freeland, who used to play quarterback as well.
Yeah, yeah, he's getting those comparisons a lot. So, he's on the right track.
I do have to say, in College Football 25, you've been eating it up. You've been in the backfield a ton when I've been playing. So I really appreciate that. I just wanted to publicly thank you.
Yeah, anytime, anytime.
Well, thanks for the time, and good luck with the prep with Southern Illinois.
Yep.
High five. Defensive line returners of note on the line. You're going to see a lot of Tyler Batty. He's the big name on the BYU defense in the publications, right? We just talked to John Nelson, who looks for a big year. Got hurt last year, as he mentioned. Blake Mangelson has been a guy who's been around looking to make an impact. Isaiah Banya will be the other end. Logan Lutui competing with Isaiah Banya. Tons of experience on the D-line, Dave.
Yeah, I talked with John's dad at practice the other day. Injuries are the worst, you know, and missing him up front was critical. But it was also tough for him to be hurt and for the family. They're so excited to have him back out there and healthy, and you can hear it in his voice. And they were close in a number of games to having a really good season on paper, as opposed to how they finished, and they seem to be motivated by it, which is good.
I'm excited to see what they can do in terms of havoc, like they talked about. We'll see it.
We're going to see a lot of wreaking havoc in 10 days. Hey, if you missed any of our coverage from camp, any of our interviews with the guys and the coaches, you can always find them on demand at BYUSN.com or on BYU Sports Nation's YouTube channel.
Coming up, the latest headlines in Cougar sports, including football's ranking in the top 134 of FBS programs. Where are they? Which Cougar had a triple-double for the United States in what sport? And which team is playing a game in Fillmore, Utah this week? Nice. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B for BYU Sports Nation on BYU TV and BYU Radio. I'm Jeremy Jordan. He's Dave McCann. 100th season of BYU football, so we like a little trivia to start the C-block, as we call it. So, Colton, try and stump us today.
All right, today's question is a two-parter. How many times has BYU been ranked in the preseason AP poll? And what is BYU's highest preseason ranking ever?
Let's start with the preseason ranking. I'm thinking the preseason ranking has got to be like eighth or ninth.
Yeah, I'm thinking
at
eighth.
Some point. I'm trying to going into 85 after the national championship. They were disrespected. They weren't top five, but they were right. – Got to be like eighth or something. And then total preseason? Like 17? I don't know. These are hard ones, man.
Yeah. You know, how long was Lavelle here? I'm going
to
go
72 to 29 seasons.
29 seasons. Yeah. So I'm going to say it seemed like they're always sitting around 20, 22 to start.
And it used to be AP top 20 for a while.
20, that's right. I'm going to go 20, 24.
24. I'll go 17, 20, Jack Bauer.
24.
I'll go 17 plus. Okay.
And then, all right, and then, the correct answer. Sorry, go ahead.
The highest preseason rank, would you?
I think eight.
Eight? We'll both say eight. Okay, how about that?
Okay, total times ranked in the preseason poll is only 11.
Oh, I was.
And highest rank is number 10, which was in 1985.
Never been inside the top 10, ever, preseason. Even 85. You win the Natty and return the quarterback, and you're not in top nine?
All right.
That's weird.
Hey,
man.
Even more impressive is that in 84, they weren't ranked.
Unranked.
And won the
Auburn in 2010 with Ryan Pugh as center, who later became the offensive line coach here, were the first team to go unranked to national championship since BYU.
So my guess was 24. My second guess was 11.
It's funny how that
it
works.
It was just going to either be feast or famine.
That's
11,
how you
that's
roll.
It?
Feast
Seems
or famine.
Like
good
that.
Thing you're not a gambling man.
I am not a gambling
Let's get
man.
To today's headlines.
BYU football enjoying the day off. Fall camp wrapped up yesterday. Tomorrow they start game prep for next week's season opener against Southern Illinois. Will they name a starting quarterback by tomorrow? USA Today Sports did a post-fall camp re-rank of 134 FBS teams. Were they all at the camps looking through the fences? BYU's at number 64, which is 11th among the 16 Big 12 teams.
BYU made it into the football March Madness. They were in the top 64, which is great. The Senior Bowl watch list is out. BYU's Gary Bohannon, Tyler Batty were the two Cougars named to the list. Also, running back L.J. Martin named to the Earl Campbell Tyler Rose Award watch list, given to the best football player who graduated from a Texas high school or Texas FBS team. He is from El Paso.
Hey, this is a big day for Millard High School in Fillmore, Utah. The BYU women's volleyball team, they're ranked 16th in the country.
Hey.
They're going to stage an exhibition game right there in Millard's gymnasium against Southern Utah. Cougars open the season next Friday against Southeastern Louisiana at Smith Fieldhouse. So they're meeting halfway in the middle of the state to have some fun on a Wednesday. I think it's a great idea.
Millard High, that was Dave Rose's first gig as a coach. Pretty cool. Women's soccer drops one spot to number 4 in the United Soccer Coaches poll. No one cared that BYU lost two exhibitions. They beat number 19 Wisconsin in the regular season.
Just win when it matters.
That's right. The Cougars play at number 23 St. Louis, the Fighting Billikens, tomorrow night on ESPN+.
Hey, Daniel Schneeman had a big game last night for the Guardians against the Yankees. These are two powerhouses in baseball. He went 2-for-5 in RBI, had some fantastic defensive plays, including one back at the wall when it mattered the
most.
Here
we go.
There's Schneeman closing in with a diving stab. Played all 12 innings. Cleveland won 9-5. In 12 innings, so things got away from the Yankees in the top of the 12th.
Well done,
big
Daniel
win for Schneeman.
He's the longest tenured Coug in a long time to be able to kind of just stay in there, right?
And he's doing stuff.
Yeah, he's doing stuff. And finally, Ronnie Jones-Perry led the United States women's volleyball team in a 4-set win against Cuba in Mexico. Team high 15 points, 15 successful receptions and serve receive, 12 digs. Today, the U.S. plays Costa Rica at 4 Eastern. Those are today's headlines. Now let's whip it.
We got some stuff we want to talk about we think you'll find interesting. Texas Tech announced they're going to start playing 7 home games in 25, 26, and 29. Do you want to see BYU play 7 home games? They've got 6 this year.
Yeah.
7.
I would like to see 7 occasionally. It doesn't need to be every year. But there are teams that have go 7 or even 8 sometimes.
Michigan has 8 home games this year.
Virginia's had 8 before. I've seen it. I would like this. It's certainly easier, Dave, when you have the 5 home games and the 4 road in Big 12 play. You alternate that. But if you have an FCS every year and you never play a G5 road game, and sometimes your P4 home game, your P4 game is on at home, that would help. This year, we're like, make a bowl game. You know, it'd be a lot easier and feel better. We'd feel better about that if Wyoming was at home or SMU
yeah.
was at home.
One of them should be. But here's the thing. Here's the price you pay. If you add an extra home game, and here's the reason BYU doesn't, is that ticket prices swell.
Yes.
And they're already you're taking your family to the game. You're paying for 6 home games, say 4 or 5 tickets. Then you add a 7th. That's, $200 more, $300, depending on where you're sitting. And then all of a sudden, for a family that's going, hey, we budgeted this. I don't know if we can do that. In some places, money's not a thing. In our culture, we like to operate on a budget. and
10% going over
spend
here.
Spend less than I think that's the nature of it is, are you ready for the expense? And that 7th game, by the way, is probably going to be a Weber State. Are you ready to
Well, you always
pay
play
that?
Your FCS. It would be a G5 or a P4.
Or whoever you can get
yeah.
for a home game. So I think it's an expense thing, and then BYU fans will have to decide. Hey, we're willing to pay more. Give us another game.
I think we should value winning over the ticket prices. Yeah, I think we should.
That's true, but you and I don't actually pay ticket prices.
Shh, don't tell anyone that.
It's easiest to say that, but I know there are folks out there just going,
I know it's
all
a
we
concern.
Can do to stay in Big 12 country in that stadium because everything went up.
I'm more concerned about winning and go to a bowl game than I am the ticket prices. I just think that should be lower on the priority, but I hear you.
You need a majority to feel that way, and then why not? You know, Notre Dame does it.
A lot of the power schools.
7 home games would be great.
Friend of the program, Brett McMurphy, recently asked FBS head coaches the hard-hitting questions as he searched to find which coaches are the best golfers. Here's what Kalani Sitake said about his process. Quote, I don't want to waste a good shot. Maybe 1 out of 100 swings I hit a good shot. He never takes a practice swing, he said. Would you do this? I always have to take a practice swing.
I take practice swings. Sometimes I take practice shots. I was on the same golf course at Riverside the other day, and Kalani was playing a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we were on opposing holes, and his ball was up just shy of the green. He's walking up there, and I shouted over. I go, I hope that was your drive. And he shouted back, I wished it was. But good
no
to see him out
shot,
there. He loves playing. You got to play a lot to play good, and he doesn't have the time to do that.
Fun fact, Tony.
He doesn't have time to waste shots.
Right. Fun fact, Tony Romo was in the Utah Open at Riverside over the weekend. Pretty cool stuff.
That is good stuff.
After the break, the inspiring story of hurdler Lindsay Middleton in the newest Deep Blue. This is BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation live from Studio B in Provo. I'm Jerem Jordan with Dave McCann. Well, on the track and in life, Lindsay Middleton excels at overcoming hurdles. She does so with an attitude of giving back to her team and those around her. This is Deep Blue.
That race is a wonderful metaphor for life. You know, you're taking a perfectly good 100-meter race and you're putting a bunch of hurdles in the way. You know, why would you do that? But that's what the race is about. The race is about the hurdles, getting over those hurdles, and that's what life is.
I started running hurdles when I was a sophomore in high school and just kept getting faster and getting faster and getting faster. And I remember each year I had a goal for myself, and my senior year my goal was to be a state champion.
The state championship was in 2018. Lindsay had been running well throughout the year.
And going into finals, I was in lane 6 on this track, right back there. And I remember getting into the blocks, and I just had this calm come over me, and I just said to myself, I can do this.
I started screaming because she had broken the state record. She didn't even know she had broken the state record, but I knew what it was and knew that she'd broken it. It was thrilling.
And it was this beautiful moment where I ran on this track, and it should have been the last of my career, but I knew that it wasn't. And that was really interesting, to cross that finish line on this track, and a girl who didn't want to run in college and felt like it was over knew it wasn't. And I think that that feeling has carried me through a lot of things in my career in college. My freshman year, I tore a tendon in my foot, and that was very painful and very odd. So I ended up redshirting my freshman year, and I didn't compete at all my freshman year.
It's hard to come off of the momentum of a state championship in high school, to be a state record holder, to kind of have all of these expectations for you from others and I think for herself. And then to have an injury, it's a total bummer.
She had also been having some pain in her hip. And so that was slowing her up a little bit, but she was working through that and then left on her mission after that. So the idea was the foot can get completely healed, whatever's going on with the hip can get better, and then she'll come back and be ready to go.
I think that my freshman year here taught me the things I needed to go on a mission and serve a mission, and the things I learned on my mission helped me come back and continue being on this team. So God knows exactly what we need, and He's in the details. And I have a huge testimony of that. My mission was the best thing ever. And looking back on it and thinking about those moments when I was praying to know if I should run here, and God kept saying, you're going on a mission, it makes so much sense now. It helped me become the person I needed to become to come back here and do what I've been doing.
The foot got better. The pain in her hip didn't get better. She came home from her mission, had an MRI, found that she had a torn labrum. It was causing her a lot of problems. It's a major surgery, and it took her out for that whole next year.
There's people that never come back from injuries like that. And so she really put in the time and the effort over many, many months to be able to run again.
From that last race in high school to the next time I ran, it was 5 years. That's crazy. I can't believe I did that. There were so many moments, just little moments of successes that were so beautiful to me. Just running a hurdle again after so many years, I almost cried. Finishing that race, the first one coming back, I did cry openly in front of so many people. And it was awesome. It was really, really amazing to finally get back to running and doing something that I love. And with the support of so many, something that felt impossible became possible.
And it was faster than I have ever run. I have two sisters who were also collegiate hurdlers, and she ran faster than they had ever run. So she officially became the fastest hurdler in the family.
We're getting ready to compete. She's doing pretty well, all things considered. And here comes another injury that she's got to deal with.
She called and asked if I was home, and I said yes, and she said, I got my results from my MRI, and I said, okay, and she said, I'm just gonna come in there and tell you. And she came in the door and just broke into tears.
I was developing a stress fracture in the neck of my femur. That is incredibly rare, but hey, leave it to me. If it's a weird injury, I'll probably have it.
It was rough, you know, to get that news. When she's been working so hard and was so hopeful about this season and to see it, you know.
That frustration of I'm doing everything that I've been asked to do. Training the way I should. I'm a returned missionary. I'm living the gospel. I'm saying my prayers. I'm reading the scriptures. You know, and bad things can still happen. And we all know that. But when they come into your life, I think it's that opportunity to either grow and do something about it with a limited capacity, or to shut down and to retreat and to be afraid. And I think that's the one thing that she hasn't done. You know, she's been sad about it, but she's never been afraid. She keeps moving forward and saying, okay, if this is God's will, then I can take another step.
I wish more than anything that I could be out there with my teammates, but because I can't, I need to find other ways to support my teammates and help them know that I love them.
I think when most of us think of captains, we think of the best person on the team. Lindsay will be the first to tell you, she is not the best person on the team. To me, that speaks a lot of who Lindsay is as an individual and how well respected she is.
What I can do right now is to be a friend, be a confidant, be a reassurance. I can be a support to you until I can be back out on the track again. And so I think it's not the title, I think it's the trust that's been the most meaningful to her in that position.
Our hurdler is, it's not who she is, you know, it's what she does. And she does a lot of other things too that are also important. But I think the fact that she recognizes that she's a daughter of God and that she's a disciple of Jesus Christ, that she's a good friend to other people, that those are far more important things than how fast she runs the hurdles or if she runs the hurdles at all.
My career has looked different. My journey has looked different than I thought. But what I do know is that I can do hard things, that we can overcome so many hurdles, and that I am loved and valued and I am important even when I'm not completely healthy. That has been really important for me to learn.
Lindsay Middleton, she's done some great work obviously on the track and in her life, as you can see, but she also was involved in some big stories. She did a Bible study at TCU.
Yeah.
Her mom, of course, Laura, heptathlete at BYU. Mike Middleton was the Cougar Club director for some years, knew your dad really well.
He worked with my dad when my dad was alive. We love the Middletons. There's so many amazing journeys. Everyone's got one. If you spend 5 minutes with anybody, you find something fascinating about them. And this is one of those where you're like, I didn't know that. I'm impressed and I'm pulling for her. Just like we do with so many that we get a feature in these stories.
Great stuff with Lindsay Middleton. You can check all the Deep Blues out on BYUSN.com and the free BYU TV app. Okay, coming up, who gets today's Rise and Shout Out and which one of you will get the Elite Voice of the Day? This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Our question of the day, BYU currently favored by 16.5 points against Southern Illinois. Would a 17-point victory be enough? At BYU Cook 12 on X. Yes, I think the QB battle and a new O-line staff, they need this game to work things out, but they need to win by 17.
Okay. Kevin.i.217 on Instagram. Brought back Jerem just in time for the 17-plus discussion, I see.
Yeah.
Well said.
Exactly. Our Elite Voice of the Day is presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated. Coach Bennett _23 on Instagram. No, it's not good enough. I will feel good if we win by 3 or more touchdowns.
Yeah, I feel like that's
how people feel. 21 is the number.
They want to see something. They just show me we've fixed our problems, and that's got to be in more than 17 points.
The question that needs to be answered out of game one is, what's different from last year?
Yeah.
Because we forget BYU is sitting on a 5-game losing streak. But we feel like this team's going to be better than last year because, one, motivated, two, continuity, and three, we think they'll upgrade with that continuity, yeah, a la men's basketball last year.
And part of the upgrade is the new offensive line coach,
mm-hmm,
and the tight end coach, running,
yep,
game coordinator. That group, can that move the battle line forward?
Because you didn't bring in a ton of newcomers that are going to have this massive impact. Like,
no.
Gary Bohannon might be the quarterback. We'll see. Jack Kelly on defense. That's kind of it in terms of, like, this guy's coming in to play right away. So,
and as a result, you don't have all these new guys out there trying to figure out the playbook.
Which was the year
before. And that should translate into better performance on the field.
That's in what theory. We hope. Yep.
Yeah.
They'll put it into action in 10 days, baby. Today's Rise and Shoutout is presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
You know who's 65 today? Jim McMahon.
Jim McMahon!
Happy birthday to Jim McMahon. You know, we're still terribly young, but Jim McMahon's gotten older.
Yeah.
I think that's how we choose to look at it.
We'll have some cold sodas. He'll have a cold one to enjoy the day. We'll all enjoy the day.
Chuck it deep. Get it to Clay Brown. We'll have a story that we've talked about our entire lives.
To me, the greatest quarterback in BYU history. And that's saying a lot. There have been some awesome ones. All right, thanks to today's guest, John Nelson.
Conversation continues 24-7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. All our shows on demand, BYUSN.com.
Sorry to Dennis, ran out of time. For Dave, I'm Jeremy. Shout out to Katie Larkin. Go Cougs!